Welcome to Akhotra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akhotra AI.
Okay, so if you're looking for the absolute core insights into what many call the definitive anti-war novel of the 20th century, well, you're definitely in the right place. We are doing a deep dive today into Erich Maria Remarque's, well, frankly, seismic novel, All Quiet on the Western Front.
Seismic is a good word. It's, you know, it's more than just a book. It's really become a foundational text if you want to grasp things like generational trauma, the complete destruction of innocence in that era. Our mission today is pretty straightforward, really. We're aiming to give you a shortcut to understanding that tragic reality of the lost generation, these young men whose formative years, whose entire futures were just swallowed whole by the mechanized brutality of World War I.
And the sheer power of it, I think, comes from its authenticity. I mean, the author, Erich Maria Remarque, born Erich Paul Remarque, actually, he wasn't writing this from some safe distance, was he?
Not at all. He was drafted, 18 years old, sent straight to the Western Front. He lived this horror.
Right. And you can feel that lived experience on every page.
Absolutely. And that raw authenticity, well, that's exactly why it was so explosive when it came out. Published in 1929, you know, right in the middle of the very fragile Weimar Republic. It shot to bestseller status immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But wow, was it polarizing. Its picture of war wasn't glorious heroism. It was just meaningless suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And that really threatened the rising tide of nationalism.
You see that instantly, don't you? The cultural reaction. Because Remarque dared to show the real cost, the human cost, of that nationalism, the Nazis, just 4 years later in 33, famously banned it, publicly burned it.
Mm.
That single fact tells you pretty much everything about how dangerous its truth felt to those in power.
It was dangerous to them because it just stripped away all the patriotic layers, all the rhetoric, and we get this perspective, this raw truth through the eyes of our protagonist, Paul Bäumer.
Yeah, Remarque's own experience sets the stage, but it's Paul Bäumer who carries the emotional weight for us. He's what, 19? A German student?
Yeah.
We meet him already changed, hardened by the trenches, but the book peels back how he got there. He and his whole class, basically kids, were swept up by their teacher, Kantorek, preaching about duty, glory.
All those romantic ideals. They went expecting adventure, maybe honor. And what they found was, well, hell. And what's so radical about the novel, I think, is how it completely redefines the enemy in war. It stresses over and over the real enemy isn't the French soldier over there or the British. It's the war itself, this monstrous, impersonal machine of war.
Yeah.
That's the antagonist.
It's the system, the bureaucracy, the ideology that just grinds them down.
No.
And you see this critique perfectly in certain characters, the authority figures who kind of embody that systemic failure, starting with guys like Kantorek.
Yeah, Kantorek represents that abstract enemy. He's the older generation, safe back home, using big patriotic words to basically trick these young men into becoming cannon fodder.
Yeah.
He doesn't face the consequences. But then you get the face-to-face cruelty, the really petty, arbitrary stuff embodied by Corporal Himmelstoss.
Ah, Himmelstoss, the postman who becomes this little tyrant during training.
Exactly. Just delights in humiliating the recruits. He's the symbol of, you know, how arbitrary and soul-crushing military authority can be, especially when given to small-minded men. But Remarque cleverly dismantles him, too. When Himmelstoss finally gets sent to the front lines, all that authority just evaporates. The boys see he's actually terrified, a coward. It shows that the ones clinging hardest to that power are often the least equipped for the real danger.
And that complete lack of any traditional heroism, that's the core of Paul's tragedy, isn't it? His journey isn't about growth or becoming a man in the traditional sense. It's just erosion.
Yes. Erosion is the perfect word.
The war just grinds away his sensitivity, his past, his ability to feel, really, leaving him psychologically scarred, like a stranger even to himself.
To survive, he has to shed the person he was. He's left kind of intellectually and emotionally adrift. But, you know, even in that wasteland, there's one source of genuine warmth, of connection, and that's the comradeship.
Right. Amidst all the loss, we find Stanislaus Kaczynski. Cat. He's crucial. Tell us about Cat. Why does this older, working-class guy become such an anchor for Paul and the others?
Cat is everything to them. He's 40, a cobbler by trade. He has this incredible, almost uncanny knack for survival. Finding food, finding supplies, understanding the rhythms of the front. He's practical wisdom personified. But more than that, he's the surrogate father,
mm-hmm.
the emotional bedrock. He offers stability. And it shows, doesn't it, that street smarts and empathy are worth so much more out there than anything they learned in school. And their bond, this deep connection across class lines, it's really the only truly human thing that seems to endure the trenches.
So Cat is the heart, the emotional anchor. But then there's Albert Kropp, who's described as the group's clearest thinker. He provides more of an intellectual counterpoint.
He does. Kropp is the one who analyzes, who questions the why of it all, which makes his fate just brutally symbolic, doesn't it? His sharp mind, his critical thinking, it ends up paralleled by his physical destruction. He gets severe leg wounds, faces amputation, realizes he'll be crippled for life. Remarque very deliberately links that intellectual critique with the physical maiming. It's showing how the war mutilates the spirit just as viciously as it does the body, especially for that generation.
And speaking of brutal pragmatism, let's talk about that really striking, almost unsettling scene early on, the boots. Franz Kammerich is dying horribly after an amputation.
Uh-huh.
And his friends, including Paul, seem almost more focused on his really good pair of boots. It sounds so callous on the surface. What's Remarque showing us there?
Stark, isn't it? But it's the ultimate illustration of how survival instinct, pure pragmatism, has to override sentimentality in that environment. The boots are a vital necessity. Kammerich, sadly, doesn't need them anymore. So the boots get passed on, first to Muller, then later, I think, to Paul. It becomes this grim tradition, and the symbolism is stark. Human lives are interchangeable, disposable, but a good pair of boots, that has tangible value. It lasts longer than a soldier's life in the eyes of the war machine. It's horrifying, but it's the reality they live in.
Paul understands the trenches maybe too well. He adapts to that brutal reality. But the real test of how much he's changed, how alienated he's become, happens when he actually goes back to the world he was supposedly fighting for. He gets leave, goes home.
And it's devastating for him. He finds what he calls that unbridgeable gap. He feels like a ghost walking through his old life. He can't relate to his family's everyday worries, their questions about the heroic war he's supposed to be fighting. It all feels trivial, meaningless. And worse, he even runs into Kantorek, his old schoolmaster, who's still spouting the same patriotic, militaristic nonsense that sent them there in the first place.
He must feel completely disconnected.
Completely. The divide is absolute. He realizes he doesn't belong in the civilian world anymore, but the trenches have poisoned him too. There's nowhere left for him to truly exist.
And that alienation, that loss of self, it really culminates in what has to be the psychological climax of the novel. Paul gets trapped in a shell crater during an attack overnight, and he ends up killing a French soldier who falls in with him, Gerard Duval.
A pressure.
Right. He stabs him almost instinctively, but then he's trapped there with the dying man for hours. This isn't an anonymous kill from afar. It's intensely personal.
It's the moment where all the propaganda, all the national hatred just collapses. He watches Duval die. Slowly, he goes to the man's wallet, sees pictures of his family, learns his trade, and he's just consumed by remorse, by guilt. He sees Duval not as the enemy, but as another human being, another victim, just like him. Caught on the opposite side by sheer chance, by lines on a map, this intimate, agonizing encounter forces Paul to confront the absolute horror of what he's become, what the war makes men do, and he fights back against that dehumanization by recognizing their shared humanity, even in death.
And it's right there, isn't it, that he has that incredibly powerful moment of recognition. He speaks to the dead man, "Forgive me, comrade. We always see it too late. Why do they never tell us that you are poor devils like us? How could you be my enemy?" It just lays bare the fundamental lie of the whole conflict. There are no real enemies in the trench mud, only fellow sufferers.
Exactly. And once Paul has crossed that line, once that last shred of belief in the cause is gone, the story just spirals down towards its inevitable end.
Yeah, the ending is just relentless. The company is whittled down. Miller dies, Lear dies, all of Paul's school friends gone one by one. But the final, most gut-wrenching blow is Kat's death. It's almost random. Paul's carrying Kat, wounded but seemingly not fatally, back to the dressing station.
Right. He thinks he saved him.
And when he gets there, he finds out Kat was killed by a tiny stray splinter of shrapnel while Paul was carrying him. He didn't even notice.
It's the final cruelty. The last anchor is gone. Kat, the one source of stability and warmth, is just extinguished by sheer meaningless chance. Paul is utterly alone now, the last of his group. The war hasn't just killed his friends, it's killed his very capacity for connection, for hope.
And then the novel delivers its final, cold, almost unbearable irony. Paul himself dies in October 1918, just weeks, maybe days before the armistice. The war was practically over.
And the way Remarque handles this is masterful, but chilling. The perspective suddenly shifts. We leave Paul's intimate first-person voice, the voice we've lived inside for the whole novel, and we get this detached, anonymous third-person military report. Paul's death, everything he went through, everything he felt, is reduced to a single blank sentence. The sentence that gives the novel its title, "All Quiet on the Western Front."
Oof. Yeah, his immense personal tragedy becomes nothing. A non-event, just another statistic swallowed by the indifferent machine.
That contrast is devastating, the internal hell versus the external quiet. It hammers home the novel's message. Individual suffering means nothing to the apparatus of war. It underscores that true courage, if it exists at all in this context, isn't about dying for a flag. It's about the struggle to survive, maybe, and the struggle to hold on to some shred of human connection against all odds.
And that message, that warning, it still resonates so powerfully, doesn't it?
It absolutely does.
Yeah.
I think it serves as a permanent reminder, really, to question the rhetoric, especially from authority figures who preach sacrifice but never face the consequences themselves.
The deepest scars aren't always visible. That's certainly something this story teaches us.
Yeah, the psychological toll is immense and lasting.
It makes you think about that line from Paul, deep in his despair. How senseless is everything that can ever be written, done, or thought when such things are possible? You have to wonder, does the very fact that a book like All Quiet on the Western Front exists, that it was written and still gets read, does that somehow refute his despair? Or does the fact that its message remains so relevant today actually confirm his bleak assessment?
That's the question, isn't it? Something for all of us to think about.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.